Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Network on Saturday, March 30th, 2019. This is episode 1578. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Simply Safe. Protect your home with the exceptional security system that will stop fear at your front door. Visit simplysafe.com/twit for free shipping on any system order. And by LastPass. Ensure safer workplace password sharing with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers. Well, really, computers? Yeah, kind of, sort of, and the internet, and, you know, smartphones. That's really the computer in your pocket, your smartwatch, the computer on your wrist, and smart everything else. Smart. Maybe we're talking smart stuff. That's it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you want to talk smart stuff. Anything with a chip in it. Artificial intelligence. Augmented reality. This brave new world we're headed smack dab into. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call free. Just use Skype out or something like that. The website where we put everything we talk about on the show, including answers and questions and comments and links and all that stuff, is techguylabs.com. And I mention that not because I want to make money off it. No, we lose money on it. But thanks to our sponsors, we can afford to. techguylabs.com is free. No sign up even. We're not tracking you. We just want to give you the information so you don't have to write it down while you're driving. It's for your safety, not mine. Actually, mine too, because instead of yelling at me, you could just go there and leave a comment. And that's free too. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's see. In the news this week, Apple finally admitted what everyone kind of knew. It ain't going to happen. AirPower. Not that this is a major product or of any deep importance. They showed it 2 years ago at the iPhone X launch, and they said, and soon you'll have this pad, this giant, humongous pad that you can charge your iPhone, your Apple Watch, and your AirPods on all at once. We'll call it Air Power. It'll change your world. And we can't make it because it's probably FCC impossible. So there, 2 years later, it's over. It's over. They're not, apparently, well, here's what Apple said. Dan Riccio, Senior Vice President of Hardware Engineering. After much effort, we've concluded AirPower will not achieve our high standards. And we have canceled the project. It's our high standards that keep us from delivering this to you. We apologize to those customers who are looking forward to this launch. We continue to believe the future is wireless and are committed to pushing the wireless experience forward. Folks at iFixit who know a little bit about these things say, yeah, it probably couldn't pass muster with the FCC. The way AirPower was going to work, the way any wireless charging works, your wireless charger has a coil in it that's got power going around and around in a circle. And a similar coil is in your charging device. And when the two are close enough, the energy from the inductive coil in the charging device is passed to the inductive coil in the charging device, the device that is getting charged. The charger passes the electricity to the chargee, and it all charges up. But the Apple device wanted more than one coil. In fact, their patent called for many coils. We've seen 2 and 3 coil devices. I actually use a 2-coil device. And the reason I like 2 coils is because you don't have to be as exact in the positioning of the device, right? And Apple wanted it to be, well, you can just put that stuff anywhere on the pad and it will charge. Problem is, according to iFixit, when you have multiple coils, they interact and they create powerful electromagnetic radiation, radio waves. And the FCC, of course, is tasked with approving devices that so that they don't interfere with your radios and other devices. And apparently, it's the engineering community's feeling that Apple just couldn't do that. They couldn't get FCC approval because it was making a lot of noise, radio noise. Now, who cares, right? There are more than enough wireless chargers in the world. And fine. Nice. Thank you for trying, Apple. They did release the AirPods that have wireless charging because, of course, if you were paying close attention, you realize that, well, the iPhone has wireless charging since the iPhone 10. Apple Watch has had wireless charging since the beginning, but the AirPods aren't, they don't know. You have to plug them in. So Apple released new AirPods with wireless charging, but they couldn't get the companion AirPod, AirPower device out. That's okay. That's okay, Apple. Apple had other things on its mind because, of course, this is the week of Apple's big announcement on Monday that they were going to change. Really, I think, I'm gonna add a little editorial on this. I think what Apple was announcing is we are shifting our focus from being a hardware company, because frankly, sales of iPhones and iPads and even Macintoshes have kind of leveled off. Not as much money to be made there. People are keeping their phones longer. To a services company. We're going to pivot. We're going to change our focus to from hardware to services because the focus of a service company, and in fact, this is the way Apple's going to report its earnings from now on, is how much money they make per customer. In the words of Oprah at this event, these phones are in a billion pockets. A billion pockets, y'all. That's what Oprah said. Yes, Oprah was there. Because she's announcing a new TV show. Actually, I think it's a couple of documentary shows that she's going to be involved in. Jennifer Aniston was there with another person whose name I always... Reese Witherspoon. I never can remember that. They're doing a new morning show. But it's a show about morning shows. You know, a show about a show. Kind of a show. If you know what I mean. It's a morning TV show, and it'll be a show about the morning TV show featuring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. And they're going to produce it. Aquaman was there. Jason Momoa. He's doing a new show for Apple. This is all for Apple, which is interesting. Apple spent $1 billion last year on new shows. His show with Alfre Woodard is called C, and it says something happened to the world, and everybody's blind. And that's the premise. Kind of sounds like Bird Box or something. But anyway, that's the premise of that. There's also, oh, the first person they brought on stage was a very tweedy Steven Spielberg. Nice tweed. Tweed's back, kids. In case you want to wear scratchy wool, Steven was wearing a tweed vest with a tweed coat and looked very tweedy. He announced the reboot of Amazing Stories, which is a TV show he did years ago, a long time ago. Kind of funny because Steven Spielberg is leading the Hollywood charge against streaming movies being eligible for Academy Awards, but that's another story for another time. They also announced they're going to do a news product that will have magazine in it. That's the one thing that's actually out. You can get that now, but you have to do an iOS update or a macOS update for some reason. I'm not sure why. You have to update the operating system to see this new news program. News that gives you a magazine. I wouldn't rush. Don't worry. No hurry. Not $10 a month, not impressive. It's, you know, they bought a company that did exactly this, and they put that into their news. And Apple News has never been a very good product, in my opinion. Maybe you like it. I shouldn't diss it. You like it? Okay, never mind. Forget I said anything. It's wonderful. I don't use it. Because it's, you know why I don't use it? Because it's a walled garden. All the news goes in, but you can't share it out. You can't. So I, when I read news stories, one of the things I'm doing, it's an age-old radio host tradition, is clipping them out. I used to do it with, literally with a razor blade and newspapers, and I'd take a stack of clippings into the studio to do the show. That's how we did it in the old days. Nowadays, it's all digital. I will go through news stories, and I will save them to a website called Pinboard. Very similar, right? It's a clipping site where all the clippings go, and then they get used not just for this show, but all the other shows I do on our podcast network, This Week in Tech. And so it's kind of a daily process for me. This is the most important thing I do news with. And Apple News, you can't do that. You can only share Apple News links. It's a very odd setup. It's kind of, I think, in my opinion, contrary to the way this whole thing ought to be run. So I'm not a fan. They also announced in the future, besides this Apple TV Plus, they call it Apple TV Plus, Apple Arcade. By the way, none of this has Apple. It all has a little Apple logo that unfortunately only shows up in Apple land. On an Android, it looks like a square box. On a Windows machine, it looks like a square box. So it's a terrible way. Never mind. Don't get me started. Apple Arcade, which we don't know how much it's going to cost or what games it'll have or even when it'll be available, but they announced it. It's kind of a, I think, pernicious new trend in technology. Google did this last week with Stadia to announce something. We're going to do it. Honest. We're going to do it, but we can't tell you when and we can't tell you how much. But we're going to do it. Honest. It's like, well, you know, let me know. Let me know when you got it going, okay? I'll check in then. We'll talk about it then. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Kim Schaffer is here. She's unbreakable, so don't you try. She'll be answering the calls, and we'll get you on the air right after this. And very springy, I might say. Yes. The unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Hello. I find myself humming this.
This is a great theme now for you, and I want to thank our musical director, Big Pee-wee, for making it happen. That is awesome. Hello, unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer.
Good morning.
Kim answers the phones each morning. She comes in bright-eyed, and you look so springy today, which is nice.
Yes, I'm trying to counteract the rain we've had. I know we're going to get a little bit more, but hopefully it's almost over.
April showers, spring
and
May flowers.
As Californians, we're not supposed to say that, but guess what? We're out of the drought now.
Yeah, we really this is it. Is there's another saying, it never rains, but it pours.
Yep.
Which has nothing to do with Morton salt.
but it's been pouring.
Yeah, it pours.
We've
yeah.
got more. I just heard this on the news the other day. We've got more rain in these 3 months than Seattle has, or Portland, or what?
But less snow than Seattle. But less snow than Seattle. So there, yeah. So, Kimmy.
Yes.
What? I see wonderful calls on the board, bunches of them.
Lewis in Hollywood, he wants to know your recommendation for a VPN for an iPhone and an iPad.
VPN. Okay,
Virtual
good.
Private
Thank you, Kim.
Schaffer.
Kimmy, don't take no Schaffer. Hello there. Welcome to the show, Mr. Lewis.
Mr. President.
Thank you for calling.
Before my question, I just wanted to say have a wonderful time on your vacation.
We're going to Kauai.
I understand that at some point you're planning on perhaps retiring to Hawaii.
Well, that's planning is a big word. Yeah. Considering, I wouldn't mind doing that.
I'd like to recommend a spot for your home there.
Yes.
The southeast coast of the Big Island.
Okay, sounds good.
Brand new, untouched beachfront property there.
Do you have some for sale, Lewis?
Brand new, I mean it's about a year old.
That sounds good. Are you moving there?
No, not so fortunate.
I like that. Okay, Big Island. Yeah, is that the wet side of the, that's the dry-ish side, right?
Yeah, that's the volcano side.
When I say that stuff is available now, isn't it? Because they've been clearing out the old homes to make room for the new. And now I get your joke.
There we go.
I don't think I'll be living on any lava fields in the near future.
Leo, you often speak of the advantages of a VPN when traveling with a laptop.
Yes.
But I travel a little lighter with just my iPad and my iPhone. So I'd like a recommendation for VPN for iOS.
Yeah, there are a couple of ways to go on this. So first, the VPN, which stands for Virtual Private Network, is a way of somewhat more securely surfing, especially when you're at a coffee shop or in a hotel, on a cruise ship. When you're using public Wi-Fi that's shared by other people, there's always the risk, you know, you're on a network that other people are on, and while it's possible to configure that network to be more secure, most of the time they're not well configured. And so that's the one problem, is that somebody on that same network, the guy in the hoodie in the back of the coffee shop, could either snoop on you or attack you, because when you're on the same network as a machine, that gives you options to kind of try things. And there are all sorts of weird, nefarious attacks they can perpetrate. Mostly ineffective if your machine is well-maintained and updated and all that stuff. That's why we always say update. The other issue is privacy from whoever runs those networks. Because, of course, when you're on a network, whoever is running the router can see what you're doing. And that even applies at home when you're an internet service provider, because they see everything you're doing. People often worry about Google snooping on them, but you know who knows more than Google and Facebook? Your internet service provider. So for that reason, a number of people have looked to virtual private networks, which encrypt the traffic coming out of your system, your phone, your laptop, your desktop, all the way to an endpoint, a VPN server. At some point, it has to go out into the public net, unencrypted. Otherwise, you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. So it goes to this server, which decrypts it and then puts it out of the public net. And that has a couple of advantages. One, anyone in between those points can't get into that encrypted tunnel, so they can't see what you're doing. But also, when you emerge on the internet, you emerge not with your internet address, not with your phone's address or your home computer's address, but with that server's address. And that server, you know, is if it's well done, and this is one thing you're always looking for with a VPN, doesn't save any information about you. So you're kind of anonymously emerging on the internet. Plus, it could be anywhere in the world. Sometimes people use this to get around geographic restrictions on content. That's, of course, a legal and moral issue that you may not want to pursue, but I'll leave that up to you. But that's another reason people do that, is to give themselves some geographic positioning other than their own. So VPNs are a good solution. There are a lot of good VPNs. There are companies that give you part of that for nothing. There is, for instance, 1.1.1.1, which is run by some folks who really are infrastructures on the internet, called Cloudflare. You can download 1.1.1.1 as an app on iOS and Android. And while it's not a VPN, it doesn't, and it, you should read what 1.1 does. It's not a VPN, but it changes the DNS, and what it does is gives you privacy. So if one of the things you're worried about is your ISP snooping on you, and by the way, when you're on a phone, your ISP is your telco, AT&T or Verizon or Sprint or whoever's running your cell phone service. And they are, frankly, notorious for being leaky sieves, selling your information. So that's why sometimes people do use 1.1.1.1 to give themselves privacy from their ISP. And that's free, easy, and because it's Cloudflare, it doesn't really slow anything down. It may even speed things up. So that's one I'd look at if that's your concern. But if you want privacy or security from the guy in the hoodie in the corner, then I would recommend purchasing a VPN service. Sometimes people run them out of their house, but that there's all sorts of issues with that, including, you know, your ISP is now seeing what you're doing. We have a sponsor, ExpressVPN, which I use and I'm very happy with. But there are a number. Nord is also a well-known name in this business. They're both offshore, and neither one logs your information, which is very happy. I also use the tiny, as I've mentioned before, the tiny hardware firewalls. Those come with their own VPN. And those are very
iOS.
Yes, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, so they work with anything. So those work. Everything I just mentioned works on iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac. Everybody has apps, but the tiny hardware firewall is kind of an interesting concept. It gives you additional security. It's tinyhardwarefirewall.com. And
how do you connect it to an iOS device, though?
All you have to do is power it. It's basically a router. So I have a number of them in my drawer here. I'll show you a couple of them. So what you would do is you plug it into the wall or the USB port on a device. If you have a battery pack, you could bring that. Not your phone, obviously, but some device to power it. That powers it up. Now it's a router. And what you do is it's Wi-Fi. So on your phone, you turn Wi-Fi on and you join this. You have a secret, you know, SSID for this. So you join this router, and then it has software that lets you log into the coffee shop's captive portal. This is the trickiest thing with these things, because you have to, you know, those pages where you click the list thing and maybe give them a credit card or just promise never to use it for bad things. In any event, that's called a captive portal. These handle that. Once it's on the captive portal, it's the thing that's visible in the coffee shop, not your machine. And it can share up to 5 different devices. So laptop, tablet, phone, all of the above. And it can either do it through a hard wire on a laptop, or it can do it through Wi-Fi to a phone or other device. They use an interesting kind of VPN service where you have a virtual VPN that's dedicated to you. They call it Black Cloud VPN. It's from a company called Wi-Fi Consulting. They also do the Hotspot VPN, which is a well-known VPN. This has a disadvantage because it doesn't let you do the geographic stuff. You can't choose your server.
I'm not worried about that.
Yeah, I think this is more secure than, but it doesn't offer that one feature. It also has built in, besides VPN, it has built in Tor, which gives you further anonymizing power.
That's good.
Yeah. Now, turning on Tor and VPN will slow your traffic down, but when I want to go to a site and I don't want them to know who I am, that's a really nice thing.
How slow will it make it if you're streaming video, say?
You wouldn't want to stream video with Tor, but the VPN's fine.
Okay. And that's which company?
These are hardware. So you go to Hotspot VPN. You buy the device, and it's $90 a year for the... All VPN services are around $90 a year, somewhere in that area.
Great.
So that's another option. You can also... Netgear sells travel routers. So that would be more flexible. You can use any VPN with that. I like these tiny hardware. In fact, the one I carry with me is even smaller than this. It's about looks like a USB key.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and all you have to do is plug that into you bring a battery pack with you. Plug it into a battery pack, and that's what powers it.
Have a great time in Hawaii.
Hey, Louis, I appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye. It's time to talk home theater with our home theater guru, Mr. Scott Wilkinson. Hello, Scotty.
Hey, Leo.
How are you today?
I'm doing good. I went and saw all the wildflowers super bloom last week.
Super bloom. Cool.
Oh, man. It was awesome.
Are the painted ladies still out, too, those little butterflies?
Yes. Oh, man. They saw a bunch of those, too.
Something neat. That's one thing the rain has brought us is this super bloom.
Yeah.
And also, if you have allergies, super nose.
Fortunately, they didn't hit me. I was glad for that.
Oh, poor Lisa's just suffering.
Oh.
So Scott talks each week with us about home theater, big screen TVs, surround sound, all that jazz. He's on a brand new TV in our studio. We finally retired the old Samsung with its 4-inch bezels. Something a little
that
newer.
That thing's been there a long time.
It has been there through 3 studios. That is an ancient TV. And I think we put this one on an arm. I mean, we got really fancy. This is a TCL, one of those new. And, man, these are so inexpensive.
Oh, man, I know.
Yeah. And so, really? And the bezels are tiny, so it looks like you're, you know, bigger. People are saying, but this is radio. I know, but I want to see him. We do a video stream for people who like to watch their radio.
Indeed.
In the old days, you know, before TV, people would sit and stare at the radio when they were listening to Fibber McGee and Molly.
So those pictures?
Yeah.
People gathered around the radio.
Staring at the radio like there's something to see there.
Yeah, right.
What do you want to talk about, Scott?
Oh, I want to tell you about something new I'm doing.
Okay.
I have recently started contributing to a website called TechHive.
Oh, I like TechHive a lot.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a publication of IDG, which also publishes Macworld and PC World.
Yeah.
Online and the magazines, although as we all know, print is going away.
Our friend Jason Snell used to run that.
Oh, okay. There you go.
TechHive's an awesome tech site.
It is.
Yeah.
It really is. And so it turns out that the main editor there at TechHive is a guy I used to work with, an Electronic Musician, many years ago. And so I hooked up with him, and I'm doing reviews of headphones and little portable Bluetooth and Wi-Fi speakers. So
perfect.
I'm becoming the giz whiz of little audio products.
junky audio products. But they're not all so junky, are they?
No, and that's the amazing thing. As you were looking there, for those of you who are watching on the live stream, I've got one of my stories there at the top of the page.
I see it.
About the Puro Quiet headphones, which are intended to help children preserve their hearing.
What a great idea. We talked a little bit earlier about this a couple of weeks ago, about how important it is to protect your hearing, and kids hearing especially.
Yeah. So these things are actually quite good. They have some isolation. They're on-ear headphones, not wrap around your ear, but sit-on-your-ear headphones. But they do provide some isolation. They have active noise canceling, which is more important. And they also limit the output, or they're said to limit the output to no more than 85 dB or 85 decibels, which many organizations claim is the maximum that you want to be exposed to over an 8-hour period. Now, I myself think that 85 is still too high, but that's just my opinion. In any event, these things work amazingly well. I actually did some measurements. If you scroll down that article, you'll find actually some measurements I took with the active noise canceling on and off. And one thing I found about these headphones, which was so interesting, is that the sound quality actually improves.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
With the active noise canceling on.
That's important because I think people think louder means sounds better.
Right, exactly. It's very analogous to you walk into a showroom to buy a TV and the brighter ones draw your eye and you think, oh, that's the one, that's the better one.
Yeah.
But it's not necessary.
No, it's the same. It's very analogous, isn't it? Yeah.
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 Yeah. Exactly. So I'm having a good time finding some interesting products like those. Or one, I'm going to give you a preview, something that hasn't been published yet. I did a little Bluetooth speaker from a company that I bet you've never heard of called TronSmart.
No, and I thought I'd seen every Bluetooth speaker in the world.
And this thing is tiny. It's like 8 inches long. It's just a little portable speaker from a company who I had never heard of before. It's called the Element Force.
And it sounds good.
I thought, you know, it's got two 2-inch drivers and two passive radiators.
Yeah, how good could that
sound? I thought
it
can't possibly sound very good.
Right.
I was shocked.
Shocked, I tell you.
Completely shocked and amazed at how good this thing sounds. Now, the caveat is it's got three different equalization modes. You can push and get something called extra bass and something called 3D stereo and something called standard. And the 3D stereo and standard modes both sounded terrible. I would never recommend it. But the extra bass preset, which fortunately is the default when you power it on, that's what it comes up in. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It rich, full sound, a stereo spread beyond the tiny confines of this little box.
Wow.
Amazing.
Nice.
Really amazing. And nice. $60.
Wow. Wow. So this is actually encouraging that some of these, because I love having a little portable speaker. I frankly travel with a BO Play from B&O.
Oh, well, which is really good.
Yeah. But it's small enough to put in a backpack or a carry-on. Uh-huh. Yeah. But when we go to Hawaii, for instance, I'll take this with me because it's really nice to have something that you can put in the hotel room and listen.
Yeah.
You know, my wife and I like to listen to books together.
Sure.
So it's great. We really like it. So, is good. I'll be interested in hearing more about these. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I've got about 10 reviews up there so far and many more to
go. You're working hard.
So I
am. We're now going to change your title to Home Theater Geek and Contributor at Tech Hive.
Yes. Look at that. So fast.
Yes.
You guys are amazing.
I also calibrated the TV while you were talking. I'm a multitasker, Scott.
You are a multitasker. That's pretty amazing. All right.
It's not very good calibration. We might have to get you and Robert Heron in to do that officially.
Well, I'd be happy to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Scott, it looks a little too red for me.
Oh. It is too red. I know. I have to work on that. I didn't see the... I wanted to turn the saturation down.
For a two-minute job, that's pretty,
pretty good. I improved it considerably. I sure did.
Yeah.
Well, good, Scott. Do you, and people can still email you at scott@techilabs.com.
Sure.
I think that's the address. Is that right? Do you know?
Or scott@twit.tv.
Okay, do that instead. That's the podcast
network.
Yeah,
that's an easier one.
Yeah, and shorter. Short's always good.
Exactly.
scott@twit.tv.
By all means, yeah, send me your questions, and I will spend some of these segments answering them and answering as many as I can.
Awesome. Scott Wilkinson, he's a contributor at techhive.com, which I've long thought is a very good site. So you've landed well.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're gainfully employed.
Yes, me too.
Man cannot live by tech guy alone. We know.
That's right.
We know. So good going. Well done. And Scott will be back every weekend. And again, if you have a suggestion, something you'd like him to review for Tech Hive or maybe mention on the show, or even a question you'd like him to answer on the show, just email scott@twit.tv. I talk about our podcast network and I forget to tell people that's what Twit is. It doesn't mean you're a fool. It's short for This Week in Tech.
That's right.
Yeah. Whew. He's no twit, my friends. He's a geek. Get it straight. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
We'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. I'm a twit. I'm a geek, not a twit. I'm a geek and a twit. Our show today brought to you by... What do you think that is? Actually, if you look at the lower third, if you're watching video, you know. And if you're not watching video, you don't know what I'm holding up. I'm holding up something that looks like an Amazon Echo, but it is so much more important than that. This is your Simply Safe base station. In here, everything you need to keep your family, your home, your property safe. Simply Safe. There's a lot of scary things out there, but one thing you shouldn't have to be scared of is your home's security. Simply Safe makes it easy, eliminates the fear because you know you're protected, and more importantly, you know your family is protected. Award-winning 24/7 protection that protects your home, and it protects it through it all. Blizzards, blackouts, burglars, baseball bats beating on this thing. It doesn't matter. You're protected with Simply Safe. Many awards. The Verge called it simply the best home security. Reader's Choice Award from PC Magazine. Two-time winner of CNET's Editor's Choice Award. Top pick from the Wirecutter. And I recommend it and, in fact, install it. My kids, everybody I know. Simply Safe. And what I love about Simply Safe, you can install it yourself. And when you move, this is a renter's dream. When you move, you take it with you, install it the next place. The most affordable 24/7 monitoring. With no contract, none, month to month, no hidden fees, there's no gotchas, you know exactly what you're paying, and they have every sensor you could possibly want, including things like pipe leaks and stuff like that, carbon monoxide. Prices are fair and honest, it's easy to install, and you get a 60-day money-back guarantee. Live in fear no longer. Protect your family, protect your home with Simply Safe. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Your home will be protected within a week. Just go to simplysafe.com/twit, simplysafe.com/twit. And we want you to do that so that they know you heard it on our podcast. Thank you, Simply Safe, for protecting my family and for supporting the Tech Guy Show. 8888, ask Leo. Too many orchestras, too little time. Back to the phones we go. 888-827-55. 36 Line 2 is Rob in Rockford, Illinois. Hello, Rob.
Hi, Leo. Good afternoon. How you doing?
I've been there. I'm well. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Hey, just, you know, I'm sure everyone else says it too, but what you do and how you do it has made a difference in my life, and I'm sure.
Aww. Thank you. That's very sweet of you. Thank you. Are you in a tech profession?
No, I'm a restaurant manager.
Nice.
But, this is kind of like my hobby.
Where in Rockford can I go to your restaurant?
Cracker Barrel.
All right. I love Cracker Barrel. Whenever I'm on the road, we stop at Cracker Barrel.
Well, glad to hear it.
Now, you don't have to wear flair, do you?
No. No.
Okay, good.
Shirt and tie, I'll do it.
What can I do for you, Rob?
Well, my wife had circa 2012, 2013 MacBook Air that conveniently died the other day.
Oh.
I went through all the rigmarole trying to, you know, re-download the operating system, yeah. wouldn't find the hard drive.
What is it? What do you get? Is it a blinking little question mark? What do you see when you try?
Yeah, blinking yeah. question mark.
Okay, that means it can't read the hard drive. Usually, yeah. if you've tried reinstalling, that just means the drive died. So
yeah.
that's not an impossible fix. In fact, it's a fairly simple fix, which you probably even could do yourself, depending on your ambition.
Well, that's my exact question. We actually went out and she got herself a new MacBook Air that she loves so far.
Oh, good.
And I'm looking for basically a resource, how to go about, you know, putting a new hard drive into the old one and
yeah.
see whether I can get some use out of it.
Yeah. So yeah, that was why I said, oh, good, because Apple has released new MacBook Airs. And I am a fan of the MacBook Air. That's what I use, even though it's not its fastest, not the fastest MacBook out there, you know, the best in any regard. I just like the weight, the form factor. And the nice thing is it's pretty much the same as her old 2012 MacBook Air. Just a little improvement here and there. So let's take that old machine and get it up to speed. And generally what I do when I need to put a new hard drive in a Mac is I go to Otherworld Computing. They only do Mac stuff, or mostly do Mac stuff. OWC is at MacSales.com. They're not a sponsor, much as I might try. And what the nice thing is, you can look it up by model number and see what. And they even have videos, and they'll even send you tools when you're doing these upgrades. So I'm looking at MacBook Airs. You're going to look under solid-state drives because that's what you want to put in this MacBook Air. You said it was a 2012?
2012, 2013, I believe.
Okay. So there, I'm looking at, and I'm not sure exactly what model. You'll have to check. You can get up to 1 terabyte in the 11-inch and the 13-inch 2012. And they have, their prices range from $89.99 to $249.99, depending on how much capacity they sell. I would get the kit, which includes the tools and so forth. And before you even buy, watch their videos and see if you feel comfortable with it. It really isn't hard. There's screws on the bottom. You probably noticed they're special, usually with Apple Pentalobe or some other proprietary type screwdriver, so you can't just open it up. But they'll include a screwdriver in the kit. You open those, remove those screws, carefully putting them aside so you don't lose them. Take the metal off the back, and you'll see the memory, or rather the hard drive right there. It's a little stick. And it's not hard to pop it out and pop in a new one. But again, watch the video. I've done this upgrade to MacBook Pros many times. It's a nice one. The hard drives that they sell, the solid-state drives they sell, are quite good. They're selling an Aura. And because they're really focused on the Mac, you don't need any special software or anything. It just plugs right in and works.
So after you put in the new hard drive, then you would go back and re-download the operating system?
Yeah, and the nice thing about Apple is they do let you do that over the network. So what you'll do is you won't even need a key or anything like that. And I think they'll have these instructions in there. You hold down Command R, I believe, as you're rebooting. And then it will launch and say, oh, you know, you need to do a network install. Set up your network. And you'll put your Wi-Fi on there. And it'll download the latest version of the operating system you can run on that, which is probably, I don't know, Mountain Lion. I don't know. But you'll get it. You'll install it. And you're good to go. And it, by the way, it'll be faster and more responsive than it used to be. It should be pretty good.
Perfect.
Yeah, you just have to decide what size. You're welcome.
Thanks for all you do.
I'm glad you appreciate it. Thank you. Take care, Rob. And next time I'm in the Cracker Barrel in Rockford, I'll stop by and say hi.
Please do.
All right. Take care. Booting the MacBook Air or any MacBook into recovery is a very handy thing to know because just like PCs, Macs have those recovery partitions. But if you're putting in a new drive, there's nothing there. It's blank. And so the network install is such a nice feature. Apple added that a few years ago, and I really think that's a nice feature. Makes it much easier. It's slow, of course, because you're downloading the whole operating system, but nevertheless, at least you can. That's the point. Jeff, Thunder Bay, Ontario. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, too. We still got a lot of snow here, though.
Oh, man, can you believe it?
Yeah, I heard you talking about snow. We still got our fair share here.
Yeah, well, you're used to it, though, I hope.
Yeah, we are. We're tough up here in the north.
But this is the time when you go, please let it end.
Exactly. It's been warming up a little bit, and we're like, we can see the end in sight.
Yay.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I live semi-rural to the city that I live in here, and the only internet service I've had at home has been DSL service. So the best I've had up to this past week was like 3.0 down and 1.0.
DSL is hobbled by the fact that it's distance affected. So the farther you are from the office, the slower it goes.
I'm about as far as you could probably get.
You probably are. Yeah, more than 2 miles, it almost doesn't work. Yeah.
So I have I've got cable company now out here who put in a cable line for me this past week, and now I can get up to 600 download, which is amazing.
Wow! Yay! Hallelujah!
Exactly. But he added something to my line here called an attenuator.
Yeah.
And at the very last second, he said, "Oh, I'm going to put this attenuator on." After we tested it, and I'm like, I wonder if I should take that off. Now
No. So he has a signal meter, and he puts it on the line. And he says, "Whoa, we're sending a little too much juice down the line." So they attenuate it, not to slow your speed down, but to keep your cable from, burning up the devices it's plugged into. That's fine. Don't mess with that attenuator.
Okay, I thought maybe if I took it off, I'd get even faster speed.
Well, you might. You might also lose your cable modem. Might also burst into a puff of flame.
I'm not looking for that.
I would trust the tech. If he says you need an attenuator, leave it on. Okay. That's to protect your equipment as much as anything else, and it shouldn't impact your speed. What are you getting?
Into the 400 to 500.
Oh my God! Just be happy.
I'm thrilled.
Just be happy. I don't get more than 100 on my cable. Just be happy.
Oh my God. Okay.
You don't need faster. You're already faster than almost any site you go to on the internet. Keep that attenuator on. You need it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You just called to boast. I know.
Hey, I've only had 3.0.
I know. You're suddenly in the lap of luxury, man. You're like better than in a big city. That's amazing. You know why I put the attenuator on there? Is they've designed that for more customers. And you're one of the first, probably. And so it's got a lot of juice. Eventually, and that's when you might want to take it off. If you notice that, you know, all your neighbors are suddenly jumping up and down because they have high-speed internet, you may notice your speed goes down a little bit. Cable is that way. Probably the reason you've got 600 or 500 is because there's nobody else using it at this point.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Hey, can I share something real quick with you?
Sure.
I've got this older machine that wouldn't do Windows updates. The last two updates, I couldn't get it to go.
Yeah.
It's about 8 years old. And then, you know, between your shows and podcasts and that, I found out that if I removed this PCI LAN card from my machine, that the Windows updates would go right through. So it would.
What?
Yeah. So I was freezing for the last year and a half to 2 years.
What a lucky revelation.
Oh, was
somebody smiling at you, man, from 3 megabits to 600 and now this.
Yes, the last couple of weeks have been good.
You're blessed. Yeah, so probably my guess would be that whatever was holding up the updates was a driver for that card.
Okay.
And by taking it out, you eliminated that problem.
It was like magic.
Wow. What made you think to do that?
I was just searching all the time through like your shows and what readers were writing in and what people were writing in. And then somebody said, "Hey, you know, if you've got this old machine with this old card, take it out and it'll unfreeze and go right through."
Amazing. And it worked. The internet, is there anything it can't do? And now, in 500 megabits.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Hey, it's great to talk to you. I hope you get some crocuses popping up through the snow there.
Me too. Thanks so much for everything you do, my friend.
My pleasure. Have a great one.
All right.
Take
you too.
Care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Scott Wilkinson, it's your turn again.
Cool. So, I'm sorry to say that my review of this little Tron Smart speaker isn't posted yet. I just turned it in, so I gave a little preview, but a lot more detail in my review, which is probably going to get posted sometime next week. Meanwhile, you can go to the Tron Smart website, T-R-O-N-S-M-A-R-T, tronsmart.com, and get some information there. But my review will be on Tech Hive probably sometime next week. Tim and I have been talking about the PSB M4U8, weird name for a headphone, wireless Bluetooth headphone, and it's my benchmark for Bluetooth headphones. Over the year, noise canceling, really good noise canceling, really excellent sound, expensive. I forget how much. Let's see, $400. So yeah, expensive, but really, really good. Paul Barton is the P and the B of PSB, and he designed speakers and headphones, and he is really, really good. And so his speakers are great. His headphones are great. These are the best ones that he has made, I think. Mike One is asking, what's the mixing board in the background? I don't have a mixing board in the background. I have a pair of speakers.
Over your left shoulder, there's something. It's not
over
a mixing
my...
board. It looks like sound processing stuff.
Oh. I mean over here?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's my rack of effects and stuff.
Yeah.
Reverb. There's a mic preamp there. There's a
so you use reverb on your tuba?
Yeah, if I'm recording in a dry environment, yeah.
Yeah.
Sonically dry, I mean.
Right.
And I'll only apply it afterwards, of course. I always record as clean with as high of a gain, well, not gain on the input, but I try to get close to the maximum amplitude when recording, but dry, so that I can then add reverb in post-production, in the mix, if you will. And if that doesn't work, then I can redo it. If you record with reverb onto your original recording, then there's nothing you can do about it if something goes wrong. So that is that's the philosophy there. The mixing board, actually, you can't see. It's behind me and too low out of the camera range. Let's see here. Friendly Manitoba says, with LG announcing they will make smaller OLEDs, what room in your house will get a smaller OLED? my bedroom, of course, the master bedroom, will probably get one. I have a 40-inch Sony in there now, LCD. It's a good TV. But it's no OLED. So Keith 43 asks, what are the things they will have you reviewing? I'm reviewing for Tech Hive small things that don't take a lot of time, not TVs. And the reason for that is with all journalistic outlets, the pay does not warrant days and days of work, which TVs take. So I'm doing headphones, I'm doing Bluetooth speakers, things like that. I recently did, one of the reviews I did for them was a pair of small bookshelf speakers called Kef LSX.
Those are supposed to be really good. People rave over those.
Awesome. They're really good.
A lot of people in the audiophile subreddit or talk about Kefs and compare things to Kefs.
Kef LSX in particular. They're powered speakers. You have to plug them both in, but they are Bluetooth.
How much are they?
$1,100 a pair.
Oh, my God.
They're expensive. They're expensive.
Jeez.
But, you know, they're great. I mean, even my wife, who is not an audiophile by any means, I was playing music on them, and she heard them and said, wow, those sound really good.
Yeah. Because
she is a musician.
Musician, so she knows what, you know, good if...
She knows what good sound sounds like, yeah. She's recorded 6 albums of her own music, so... She's been in recording studios. She knows what they're supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
But she's you know, in her just listening life, you know, when she's just listening to tunes while exercising or whatever, she has less concern about that.
Thank you, Mr. Scott.
My pleasure. I'll see you back here at 2 o'clock.
All right. Thanks. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, this is the time when we talk tech. Sorry. Why am I apologizing? It's exciting. It's fascinating. This is when we talk about computers and the internet and the way it's changing our world, how technology works, how to get it working again when it stops working, which it does all the time. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. If you want a little information, a little help, maybe you'd like to share something you found that's really cool, 8888-ASK-LEO. There's also a website associated with the show that's free, open, no sign-up, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. And if you go there, answers to all the questions will appear there. James DeRuvo's writing them down as we speak. And that's a good place to go for follow-ups and to leave your thoughts. If you can't get through on the phone, you can always leave it at the website, techguylabs.com. We also have an ongoing chat site that's been going on since, I think it's like a sourdough starter. I think the starter for this was first used in 1992. So what is that, 27 years ago? So it's nice and fermented. It's a fermented chat room. Going nonstop since 1992. And associated with this show, it's where all the people listening to the show and watching it, some of them on our live stream are hanging out. They're very helpful to me because they've been listening so long, they know everything I'm going to say ahead of time. So that if I forget something, I can ask them and they'll remind me. and it's a good place to go if you want to, you know, play along in the home version of our show. That chat room is irc.twit.tv. irc.twit.tv. Line 4, Richard Worcester, Massachusetts. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, hanging in there. That's all you can do these days.
Yes, I know the feeling.
Question for you, Leo. I bought maybe in 1926 or whatever. A Micron Client Pro.
Oh, that was a long... Micron's long gone, but they were a great company. I mean, I think they still make memory, but they haven't made PCs in a long time.
No, I know, but I didn't learn from the first mistake, so I bought the third one. And I paid like $4,900 for this unit. It still starts up and all that stuff, and it's with Windows XP. And what I wanted to do is get a new hard drive for it and maybe add some more memory. You got any suggestions for
it? Yeah, so... All PCs pretty much are, you know, stock equipment. It's very rare for a PC to have anything too proprietary in it. So that means almost always you can upgrade them with off-the-shelf components, hard drives and memory very typically. But you have to get the right ones. And with memory, it's easy. You can go to a website like Crucial or Kingston. And they have a memory picker, and in most cases they'll have the model that you're looking for. You say, oh yeah, it's a Micron, and whatever model number you can use or year, and they'll tell you this is what it took, this is how you add it. Because in those days, sometimes you'd add memories in pairs, you'd have to have matching pairs, so you have to pay attention. Sometimes it's a little funny how you do that. You should look inside. It's a desktop. It's a case like a tower.
Yeah, it's a tower.
Yeah, so you look inside and see how many memory slots you have. And often you want to have the same capacity in each slot. You want to balance them. But those rules will be on a site like Micron's. Micron actually, I think, still sells memory. Crucial. Maybe they bought the Micron memory brand. I can't remember. Go to crucial.com.
For the solid-state hard drive, who would you recommend?
That's a little trickier. Depending on if you have SATA connectors or IDE connectors, you probably have SATA, right? Do you know?
I have no clue.
Yeah, so you're going to look inside... And you're going to look at the cable. And if the cable is like a 29-pin, you know, like a lot of pins,
right,
two rows of a lot of pins, That's IDE, and that's a different type of drive. That's going to be a little harder to find. You probably can't get an SSD in IDE. You might have to get a converter. But the little small SATA cables are their connectors are just little black keyed connectors. They're not very many pins. They're very distinctive, and you could look online and look at SATA versus IDE to figure out what you've got. Or you can, if you can find a site that has the specs for that old Micron, thisoldmicron.com or whatever. Now, here's the one thing you should keep in mind. What operating system are you running on there?
It's Windows XP.
Yeah. So there are going to be limitations in terms of how much memory you can access. Is it a 64-bit version or a 32-bit?
64.
Okay, so that's good. You can access more than 4 gigs of RAM in that case.
Okay.
SSD might be a little more tricky because both the BIOS in that machine and the operating system may not see the higher capacity SSDs, you know? So you might say, I'm going to put a 512 instead of maybe a 2 terabyte in there. But again, and I don't know of a place you can go and say, hey, here's what I have. What would be an appropriate SSD for that?
Well, you know, there was one time, too, when I had one of the, a $2,400 HP notebook. I brought it to the local Staples, and they had it for like 2 weeks. Got it back. I went next door to a place to have a drink, and I turned the thing on because they got Wi-Fi and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
It wouldn't even start up.
Yeah.
I don't believe this here.
Yeah.
Brought it back. They kept it for another 14 days. It lasted for 6 weeks or 6 months, whatever. It ended up in the yellow trash bags.
That's my concern on this. This thing is pretty old. Honestly, you might be better off. The problem, you start upgrading, then you say, oh, now I need a new power supply. Oh, now this motherboard, it can't really handle this large drive. Now I need to... Pretty soon you've upgraded the whole thing. You might be better off, and it might even be cheaper just looking at, you know, an inexpensive replacement that has a more modern operating system. The other concern is that Windows XP, as you I'm sure know, has stopped. They haven't been a security patch in that for years. So
right. You
can't use modern browsers with it. Chrome and Firefox aren't updated. Internet Explorer is not updated. The operating system is not updated. That thing shouldn't go online. It's dangerous to use.
Really?
Yeah.
Then I've been thinking about switching over to an Apple product, but I don't know which one to get.
They're expensive.
A lot of power.
You want a lot of power? Well, you don't have a lot of power now.
I know that.
Okay. Anything that you get from this century will be a lot faster. No, you know, even the cheapest possible computer will be a lot faster than what you've got right now. And frankly, more secure. I think a Mac might be a very good choice. They're very nice machines. They have new iMacs that are not hugely expensive. A 21-inch. How big is the screen? Do you like a big screen?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you might want to go with a larger iMac, the 27 inches. That gets a little more pricey. If money is not an object, the fastest Mac out there right now is the iMac Pro, but it starts, hold on to your seat, at $5,000.
Wow.
So that's when I say money is no object. So you pay for speed, obviously. And Macs, correct, you pay about a 50% premium because of the brand name.
Right.
And I think the operating system might be worth it. I really like using Macs. I use Macs mostly.
Right. Then I also I've got an iPad. It's the fifth generation. Having problems receiving emails because I use...
Oh, you need to update that too. Yeah.
Well, we went out to the Apple store here in Northboro, and they call him a genius. Anything with it? I couldn't help but laugh. I said, and this is what they call a genius.
The word genius has become devalued considerably by Apple, unfortunately. I'm sorry to say. Yeah, I've heard some real horror tales. And yet I know many of these geniuses, and many of them are very, very good. Maybe go back and get a different genius. It's fifth generation. Are you all the way up to iOS 12 on it?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. You might just reset it, start over, erase and redo it.
Yeah, but Leo, it won't even let me turn around and get email on there because it's going through Spectrum and through Apple, and then Spectrum tells me that they're negotiating.
Hold on, I have to take a break. I'm going to help you. Just hang on while I take a break, okay? Because email could just be a simple thing. It could be a simple thing, but we'll figure this out. 8888 Ask Leo. Our support, our hand-holding, our computer support session, computer counseling continues right after this. Sorry, Richard. I just had to do that. So, so you're sure the settings are correct? I guess that's the first thing you have to check on your Apple Mail.
Well, when the tech guy out there at Apple, he didn't seem to know what he was doing. I mean, I don't know. I talked to a girl prior to that from Texas for an hour, and we're trying to do all kinds of settings on there. It still wouldn't do anything.
So what you need to do is go to Spectrum, and they'll have a page that says, and it doesn't have to be specific to the iPad, but you're going to need the names of the mail server, the addresses, the password, the login, all the credentials, right? And then you go into your Apple accounts settings. It's in settings, and it's under accounts. I would delete the current Spectrum entry, okay?
Okay.
Just delete it, and then go to add account, and then it's probably an IMAP account, so do other.
Right.
And then you're going to add the mail account, and you're going to add it from the information that's on that Spectrum page, exactly. The one thing that you're going to need to know, of course, is your Spectrum login.
Right.
That's going to be unique to you. And just go through it and add it all by hand. What error message do you get when you try to get mail?
You have no email. There's no email for you. That's what you get.
Yeah. So I would very first thing I would do is make sure those settings are correct. That's almost always the cause for that.
All right. Well, I'll give that a gallon try, and hopefully it works for me.
Yeah. I think it will.
Apple computer you spoke about.
I tell you, if you like your iPad, I think you'll probably like a Mac.
Okay.
The other thing to look at, it depends what you do. What kind? You said you want a lot of power. Why is that?
Well, because I'm retired and there's a lot of stuff I do. I like to do this PowerPoint stuff and I'll be able to. And I do a lot of recording on there. But don't forget now, with the Mac computer, I have to have an external gizmo there.
Yeah, but it comes with GarageBand, which is, simply put, the free best free music program of all time.
Really?
Oh my God, yeah.
Okay.
So there's a real compelling reason to go with that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You've been a big help.
My pleasure, Richard.
You have a good one. And hey, enjoy your trip to Hawaii.
I'm excited. Now next week we'll have a full show, but the week after it's Rich DeMuro. So keep listening.
Okay.
Don't leave Rich all on his own.
Got it, buddy.
Take care, Richard.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Leo LaFort, the tech guy. You know what you should get sick of? Those bad computers in your technology drive you nuts, right? And yet, it's such a great tool and toy and fun, and there's so much you can do with it. I have to say, a little bit of the blame has to go to the companies that make this stuff, though. They just... when an engineer designs something, they design it differently than a regular person because they understand what's going on under the hood. And so it's like if you drive a car that was, that's designed by a mechanic, it's different than you drive a car designed by a human. Get one of those race cars and wow, how do you drive this? Same thing with a computer. And some companies do better than others. Richard was looking at a Mac. I think... Apple for years was a computer for the rest of us. Remember those days? That was the old idea. It was going to be easy to use. And I think to some degree that was true. Maybe not as true as Apple's marketing implied. But as time's gone by, and this is true for every operating system, as they add new features, as things change, it gets less and less intuitive, less and less easy to use. And at this point, for years I've used Macintoshes. Because they seem more intuitive. But at this point, I think as Microsoft's gone along, they've improved usability. There is not a lick of difference between Windows 10 and Macintosh OS. It's really more a matter of taste at this point. And honestly, because there's such a variety of Windows PCs out there, so many manufacturers, only Apple makes Apples, but you've got thousands of people making PCs. There's a lot more choice, whether you want to get a Surface from Microsoft, a business beast from Lenovo, an elegant, executive style computer from HP. There's just a huge amount of choice. And I think Windows 10 is pretty good, honestly. And Microsoft's done a lot to make it not only usable, but secure, reliable. You don't see blue screens of death anymore. It used to be you'd be running a computer to crash. If it didn't crash every day, you'd think something was wrong. No, they're very rarely crash unless something is actually wrong. So it's hard for me nowadays to say Mac, Mac, Mac. I think Windows 10 is very... In fact, the most recent computer, I just bought a Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Extreme, a Windows 10 machine. I might run Linux on it eventually. Usually that's what happens to my Windows computers, is after a couple of years when I get a new one, I'll put Linux on the old one. And I like Linux. It's a free operating system. It's really powerful. Here's the one area that I think Mac is great in, and I don't think for most people this makes any difference at all. Because Macintosh OS is based on Unix under the hood, there is a very nice command line that is really effectively a full Unix command line under the hood. And for programmers, people who like to work on the command line, that's a really great thing. If that's not... Apple has a real advantage there. Microsoft's trying to catch up. They have a Linux subsystem for Windows now that does some of that. But if you really... if you know what SSH is... and you prefer LS to DIR, you should get a Mac. If none of that makes any sense to you, I think Windows 10 is reasonable. And then, of course, and it would be remiss if I didn't mention this, most people shouldn't get either. Most people, and not Richard, because Richard wanted, you know, he was doing music recording and photography. He said, I'm retired, I do a lot of stuff. And he wanted to do a lot of high-end computing. But for most people, a computer, that laptop, is for surfing the internet, getting email, the kinds of things you do on an iPad, maybe running a game occasionally or looking at a movie. For those people, Chrome OS is probably the right choice. This is Google's alternative. Chrome, you can get a Chrome desktop, but most people get Chrome laptops. They call them Chromebooks. Google makes them, but many other companies make them. Almost all the same companies that make Windows machines take a lower-end version of their Windows machine and make it a Chromebook. They're more secure than either Windows or Mac by a long shot. They're simpler because they're not a full general-purpose operating system. They can't do as many things, although you can run Android apps, so there's a pretty good selection of apps available on Chromebooks. I think for most people, I was just talking to my daughter yesterday. She's a senior in college doing her thesis right now. And she has a Windows machine. She's had Macs. In fact, all through high school she had Macs because that's what I set her up with. But for almost all of her college career, she's been using a Chromebook. And she loves it. She said, I don't have to worry about backup. Everything's on Google Drive. I do everything on Google Drive, which means word processing. She's writing her thesis in the Google Word Processing app. Doesn't have to worry about losing it. It's automatically on Google Drive. She said, I'm worried because... I also use the college cloud, and I have stuff stored there. When I graduate, I have to take it off of there. I said, that's not a problem. We'll pay $2 a month, and we'll get another 100 gigabytes, or is it 200? I think it's 200 gigabytes of storage on Google Drive. You're already using that. We'll move it to Google Drive. All your stuff will be there. Doesn't have to think about backup. Doesn't have to think about viruses. Doesn't have to think about, you know, security. If something goes wrong, they have a feature on Chromebooks called Power Wash that's basically a complete reset, gets you right back. And because you're using your Google account, you log into your Google account, it's all there. It's all set up, all the stuff that you had before. There's a lot to be said for that. If you don't know you need a Windows machine or a Mac, if you're not Richard and you know, well, I'm going to be doing music recording, I really would look at a Chromebook. I think most people would be well served. It's less expensive, more secure. We don't talk about power. It doesn't have a lot of RAM, or, you know, processors tend to be kind of anemic because you're not doing anything that needs power. You're just surfing the net. You're using Chrome. The more I think about it, the more I really want to steer people in that way. Now, if you're Richard and you say, you know, I need to do this and I want to get a Mac, I would say probably, yeah, get a Mac. He has an iPad, he likes his iPad. But I honestly, that's a personal choice that isn't driven by technology. Mac OS, Windows 10, very comparable. I think Microsoft's done a bang-up job with Windows 10. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. Come back with more right after this. He's been everywhere. Johnny Jets breathing the mountain air. He's our travel guru. And today, where are you, John?
I'm breathing the city air today. I'm in Dallas, Texas, about to speak at the Travel and Adventure Show in an hour and a half.
Johnny's,
and again tomorrow.
You do, is this the last one of the year? You do these all over the country, right?
Yeah, they're all over the country. This is the last one of the year, so it should be a big party tomorrow night.
Oh, fun. And then they start up again in the fall or when?
No, they don't start up again until January.
So they only do it for 3 months?
They do. They do. They pack them in, though, 11 and 3 months.
Wow. And you're at all of them?
No, I've 2 years ago I did almost all of them. This year I've done 5.
That's a lot in 3 months.
So.
And
it's good. It's great.
The good news is.
Just on Twitter just now, I just saw one of your listeners say that they're here and that they've been fans of mine and because of you, and they're going to the show.
Oh, nice. You're speaking after this?
Right after this.
Nice. That's why you're dressed up.
That's right.
All right. He's got his Rich DeMuro airplane shirt on.
That's right. Rich is the one that told me to buy this shirt. He sent me a tweet, and I bought it. So, Rich, thank you.
Well, Rich will be here in 2 weeks filling in for me while I'm in Hawaii. So, say hi to him then.
Lucky you. Speaking of Hawaii, by the way, I don't know if you remember, a couple months ago we talked about an app called the Shaka.
Yeah, I've got it on my phone.
Okay, good. Well, actually, there's another app, Shaka Guide, it's called.
Yeah, they're like guided tours you listen to as you drive around Kauai.
Exactly, or all the islands.
Or any of the islands.
All the major islands.
Yeah.
But, and they have different ones, you know, different drives. So I think in Kauai they have 4 different ones.
Yeah.
But this one I'm talking about, after I mentioned that on your show, I had a bunch of listeners email me about another one called this one is called the Gypsy Guide, GYPSY, and the GP and the S are capitalized.
I get it.
And so it's similar as the Shaka Guide, but it's on iOS and Android. Depending on the destination, it costs $3.99 to $9.99, and there's 34 in North America. But it's not just Hawaii. The Shaka Guide is just Hawaii. This one will go from, you know, destinations ranging from the Arches in the Canyonlands to Yellowstone. And they have Hawaii as well. They also have Canada, Banff, Lake Louise, which is one of the most beautiful places.
Such a good idea because you've got the phone. It's got a GPS. As you drive, it's like having a tour guide in the car with you. Oh, wait a minute. That's their tagline.
And you don't need to have a cellular connection because it's GPS.
Oh, nice. So it downloads all the content. Ah, very nice.
Yeah. So it's a great little thing for travelers to enrich themselves, learn more about the destination and, you know, pass time, especially if they have a long drive.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, so I'm interested to hear how you're going to like that Shaka Guide. I think you said you're going to try it out.
Yeah, but now I'm thinking I should try the Gypsy Guide, too.
Yeah, I think the Shaka Guide should be the one you try.
It's Hawaiian only, so it's going to be a little more Hawaiian-focused, right?
That's what I would think.
Yeah.
And then I do have a website for you.
Okay.
This one came out, and it's pretty interesting. It's called Hip Camp. So HIPCAMP.com, and they're calling it the Airbnb of camping. So I'm not a big camper, but if you do like to camp or, you know, want to go in an RV or glamp, you know, you can search. They have 300,000 places you can do it between parks, ranches, vineyards, and even people's properties, as long as they have 2 acres or more. And it's all in the U.S. And they actually tied in with the U.S. government. So they're actually, I think it's the first time they allowed an outside app. They're pulling data from the recreation.gov.
Oh.
So you see, you can even book federal campsites. Actually, I think you can just see the availability in the big camps like Yosemite and the Smoky Mountains, but you can at least see the availability, see if they're available.
And some of these have accommodations more than you don't. Some you bring your tent, but some have accommodations.
Some have barns. Yeah. Some have their own yurts already there. It's a new travel site. It's interesting. And, they're calling it the Airbnb of, I don't know who's calling it the Airbnb of Hip Camp. It might be their PR spin, but.
Well, but I think it kind of is like an Airbnb, except instead of homes, you're renting a tent or a spot, right?
For sure.
When
I first heard about it, I was like, are you kidding me? People can just rent out their backyard. It's going to be a nightmare driving down the streets or
What people say about Airbnb, right? They're having legal problems all over the place.
They are. But this they say, has to be at least 2 acres or more, so it's not going to be someone's little backyard.
That's fair.
And there has to be toilets on there unless it's 20 acres or more.
Oh, okay. What happens after 20? I don't even want to know. Don't even. Let's not go there. all right. So that is hipcamp.com. We're getting ready for summertime. People are going to be heading out to camp, so that's cool. Hipcamp.com. Yep. And then driving guides, the Gypsy guides. And there's a whole – you can actually get a Gypsy Guide Hawaii collection for $26. It includes all the islands. Or just the Kauai Gypsy Guide, which is $6.99. I'm going to buy that one. And I have the Shaka Guides. I am going to be so ready. We're going to have dueling phones, dueling guides. Well, no. I'm going to give you a comparison. I'm going to say which one was the best.
You're going to be ready. And you're flying Hawaiian Airlines.
Yeah. So I'll be looking for the dusty ukulele, right? They always have a ukulele on the plane.
That's on the small.
That's on the island hops?
They do have one. And actually, I asked the flight attendant a couple of months ago when I was on it. She's like, "Yes," she was shocked that I knew.
If I ask the flight attendant, this is going to be I think it's a 767. If I ask her,
you're on the aren't you on the A321 Neo?
I am on the A320. You are Johnny Jet, the travel guru. He even knew the plane I'm going to be on. You're right; it's an A321.
Yeah, Neo. It's a new engine optimization or operator.
Oh, that sounds scary. Is that bad?
After the
737 MAX, now I'm worried.
Don't be worried.
Okay. They offer a $150 per person upgrade to first class on this flight.
It's only $150 for sure.
Really?
Are you kidding me? The reason why you take it, for a number of reasons. Number one is now your bags will get to be free.
Oh.
To choose your seat in coach is going to cost, sometimes they charge $90. I don't know what Hawaiian charges.
Oh.
You want to sit in a better seat up front.
Oh. But
it's only $150?
That's what they said.
Cheap. Then that's going to be gone by now if you haven't jumped on it.
Honey. Jump on it, honey.
That is a no-brainer. And you get food and the Hawaiian service. Those seats are not like their A330.
They're not lie flats. I understand. No. Yeah.
But still, last night I flew to Dallas, and I was number one on the upgrade list. And shockingly, I got upgraded the very last second. I was already in my coach seat. But, all of a sudden, I didn't think I was going to be eating. And all of a sudden, they're serving me a meal. And so it's nice to have a bigger seat. And you just, it definitely makes the experience a lot better. And for $150, again, you'll end up saving money.
Okay, I'm sending my wife a note saying, please, dear, see what you can do.
Yes.
That's a limited time offer probably that's long expired. I don't know. That's what it said. Okay. Who knows? They still give you a lay when you get off the plane?
No.
They don't do that?
No. The only time they ever do that is if you book a tour or tour guide or if it's a special event.
That's the old days. Johnny Jet. He's at johnnyjet.com. That's his website. He's at Johnny Jet on the Twitter. He's also got a great Instagram feed of travel photos. And if you happen to be in Dallas right now, go to the
Adventure Show.
Adventure Show. And go see him. He's about to go on stage any minute now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
See, we were just going to go. It's three of us. It's Lisa and Michael and me. So,
$150
each.
I understand, but that again, you're checking bags. So
yeah, okay. Man, maybe we blew it. I didn't even. I said, we can fly economy. It's not going to be that bad.
There's not a lot of seats. I think there's only. I think there's only 8 or 16,
it's
maybe
probably
16.
Too late. It's probably
16
too late.
Seats up there. Yeah. Let me tell you right now.
This isn't high season yet.
No, but actually, every season now in Hawaii is high season.
Yeah.
Especially with Southwest coming in, all the airfares have gone down.
Oh, good.
So actually, now the hotel prices are going up because. Oh. There's so much lift going into Hawaii. There's so many people that there's not enough hotels.
Oh, wow.
So now they're charging more.
We're staying in Poipu.
Well,
I like saying you're, Poipu.
You're living large. I'll tell you how many seats it is up front. There's 18. in first class.
Oh, we have a shot. I'll, you know, we can leave the kid in the back. He's a kid. He'd be fine.
Actually, there's a story today about an Instagrammer, a woman. She leaves her husband with the two kids in the back.
I'm an Instagrammer. I'm an influencer. I need to fly up front.
Yes.
Oh,
but,
these people are, you know, loathsome.
I have no problem with that. I got upgraded the other day going to San Francisco both ways.
You left Natalie in the back?
They upgraded me and Natalie. Oh. And they had Jack in the back. And I was like, what? So
you
obviously,
can't leave a baby
Natalie,
in the back.
No, so Natalie and Jack sat up front, and I sat in the back, but I was happy to
sit
in the back.
You're a good father.
I got work done. It was quiet, and they were able to.
That's
enjoy
fair.
It. Natalie
she
had
gets the baby, but she also
job.
Gets first class. Yes, absolutely. That's fair.
But I have no problem. You know, if you get upgraded for free, you know, why not take it?
Well, for free, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have the.
So
miles.
Real quick with the Hawaiian Airlines.
Yes.
If you go to seatguru.com or just go into Google, type in Hawaiian Airlines, your type of plane, it'll bring up their seat map. So first class, the pitch is 45 to 46 inches.
Oh,
the width
that's nice.
Is 18 inches.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
And they're 16 recliner seats, not 18. My eyes are, oh, no,
that's
it's 18.
Nice.
No, sorry,
nice.
They're 16. It wouldn't be. And then the economy is 31 to 32 inches.
Oh, that's tight.
But the width of the seat is only 17.3. So it's not going to be much wider, but you get a lot more leg room. And that's what's important to me. So, anyway,
I'll tell
enjoy
you
your trip.
Get to work.
Okay, good.
Thank you. I can't wait. We're really excited. This is going to be nice. This is, I like the active touring, seeing things, vacations, but sometimes it's nice just to go to the beach.
Good. And when you're on Hawaiian, by the way, they do offer the like Hawaiian sun drinks like guava juice or pog.
I'm not allowed to drink any of that stuff. That's the only drag to this is that I'm on a big keto diet, and Hawaii is not known for.
No.
There's a lot of sugar in Hawaiian food because they grow it, or they used to, and a lot of So I'm gonna. That's going to be the one downside to this. I'm not going to be able to eat my way through Hawaii, but that's probably a good thing.
You'll come back healthier.
I will come back healthier. I got Shaka Kauai, the Shaka guide, right there on the phone. We're going to Kauai. Aloha. Aloha.
Have fun.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then I just downloaded the Gypsy Guides.
Actually, talking about Hawaii, there was a flight going out an hour after mine last night going to Hawaii. And these flight attendants boarded who were trying to get home. They're commuters, so flight attendants commute. There was one woman was pregnant. She's like, if we didn't get on this flight, we're going to fly to Hawaii so they could fly to Dallas.
Or maybe just stay.
No, they were had to get to Dallas to work.
All right, Johnny.
Yeah.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. Line one, Chip Corona Del Mar, California. Hello, Chip.
Hi, Leo. Yay.
Yay. Hi, Chip. I'm talking to Chip. Yay.
So I'm looking to build a new computer. The one that I'm using now I built and got up and running July 13, 2009. So
a day that will live in infamy.
So I want to build something new, and I'm tired of trying to force things to work together.
Yeah.
And I was looking for some recent information for medium-high processing power computer with components that are already known to work together with access or references to drivers that get it all going.
Yes. Here's where I'd send people and where I go myself. There's a website called PC Perspective, PCPER.com. And this is something a lot of websites used to do. They're I think, the last people still doing this. But they have what they call a hardware leaderboard, where because they review every component that goes into modern PCs, they know what they like. They know how they work together. So if you go to PCPER.com, at the tab, one of the tabs on the top is hardware leaderboard. And then what they do is they describe four different machines: a low-end system for $468, a mid-range system for $982, a high-end system for $1,529, and a dream system for $3,295. And in each of those systems, they tell you all the components. They know they work well together. They'll recommend, I mean, and this is everything. This is a motherboard. This is a CPU. This is video cards, memory, hard drives, sound cards if necessary, even a power supply or case. So I think this is a great place, at least to start your research. You know, part of the fun, I don't generally tell people to build computers anymore because you don't save money. The people who buy components by the thousands are going to get a much better price than you are buying one processor. You know, the big risk, as you know already from having done this, is if something doesn't work, there's nobody to call. You can't call Dell. You have to, you're the one to call and you have to figure out and even call, you know, saying something's not working and calling the motherboard manufacturer, well, good luck. So support is you. On the other hand, the advantage of doing this is you get exactly what you want. You learn about each component and you can pick the components on a fairly refined basis. You can say, well, I know I need this, this, and this. So if that's what you want to do, it's really a hobbyist thing to do. And I just warn people, you know, building your own computer is not a savings. Usually it costs money to do that. But the advantage is you're going to get exactly what you want and you're going to learn. So that's why I say start with a hardware leaderboard, but then do your own research. I read up on components on Reddit. Reddit's a very good place for enthusiasts to go. If you go to the Reddit, you know, PC, build your own PC subreddits, you can read there, you know, different issues with different boards and so forth. That's a very good site. And then Anon's Tech is very good for additional reviews of particular components. But for what you describe, which is a system that kind of works together, is designed, it's easy to buy too much processor and too little GPU, or more likely get a processor and then a GPU that's way faster than the processor can handle. And so you do want to have components that are somewhat matched. And doing it this way, I think, is a very good solution. So that's what I'd suggest for you, Chip.
Most of what I work on is photography, and I build time-lapse movies from stills. Although sometimes I work on very large Photoshop files, I've worked on Photoshop files over 13 gigabytes.
Oh, wow. So you're going to put a lot of RAM in there because that's,
yes.
That's you know, the Photoshop works in layers, and each layer is going to require 13-plus gigabytes. So you can see how quickly you'll go through RAM on that. So, yeah, you're going to want a 64-gig machine probably.
Working on a file that big, you get a real quick appreciation of whether or not your system is sufficient.
Yeah.
May I make a quick comment about Hawaii?
Yes, I'm on my way, yes.
Before you move to the southeast corner of the Big Island of Hawaii.
Yes, where the lava flows are. He was teasing me, you understand. Go ahead, yes.
Well, the lava flows, I understood. The lava flows, that's one thing. But what you might want to look up is the Great Crack.
Oh, no.
Which is famous. We know it's famous on Hawaii. They know all about it. There's a Wikipedia page all about it. And to find out what the Great Crack means, you can go to Google Maps or Google Earth Pro. Go to the island of Molokai.
Yeah.
Switch to satellite view. And you can see that most of the island, thousands of years ago, collapsed and slid into the ocean.
Holy cow.
Some parts of the island going over 100 miles north of the actual island itself.
Wow.
And now Molokai is a fraction of the original island.
Wow.
And by the way, should the southeast corner of the Big Island of Hawaii collapse, it would create a tsunami that would wipe out all of the west coast of the United States, most of Canada, most of Mexico. And just in case people on the east coast think they're okay, they should look up the Canary Islands, Cumbre Vieja, which is similar, and it would, if it collapsed, and it collapsed before, would wipe out most everything on the east coast of South America and North America.
Okay, well, it looks like I'm moving to Indianapolis. Thank you, though, for the the input there. Yeah, you know, plate tectonics are relentless, and the Earth's crust is not a stable thing. Wow, that's fascinating. I am looking at the Great Crack right now. Eight miles long, 60 feet wide, 60 feet deep. Nice, very nice. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Enjoy your new computer. Let me know how it works out for you. You've done this before, right? I mean, this is not your first time.
Oh, yeah.
So you understand the pitfalls of it. The worst thing, and I love building a computer, and it's really like Legos these days. It's not like it's hard. But the worst thing is when you got everything all set up, you've been very careful, you built it perfectly, you turn it on, and it doesn't start up. Because that's when you got to go.
I started in 1969. In the 90s, wow. I was an integrator.
Oh, all right.
And oh, my gosh, what we had to go through in the 90s was just backbreaking work. So
it's a lot easier these days.
I really appreciate it because I don't do it so much anymore.
Right.
And you're like the best source of information. You save me so much.
Oh, thank you.
You make me look good.
Hey, it's really nice to talk to you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Yeah, the folks at The Verge, I think, recently did a video on building a computer and got a lot of internet hate because they did it wrong. They made some kind of fundamental errors, but the worst error they made, they put the power supply in backwards. And people were just – The Verge eventually took it down and has been trying to shut down criticism of it ever since. It was that embarrassing. So be careful what you watch on YouTube. There is a lot of information on YouTube, much of it very good, but not all of it. I prefer sites like PCPer where you can read it and see it. Maybe if you want to watch some videos too, that's not a – you know, bad thing. Just consider the source. If you like this kind of programming, if you're really a geek, you're like Chip and you like this stuff. Don't forget, we have a podcast network that really is for tech enthusiasts called This Week in Tech at twit.tv. A dozen or more podcasts on Macintosh, Windows. A lot of people like to keep up on security with our Security Now podcast. We have an enterprise tech podcast. I host many of them, but we have other hosts too, and it's a lot of fun for hardcore geeks. So the radio show's on the weekend, but all week long, lots more tech stuff for you at techguylabs.com. We're going to take a little break, tiny little teeny tiny whiny tiny teeny tiny timeout for the news at the top of the hour, and then we're going to come back with lots more of your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. New show next week. Don't worry. Rich DeMuro will be taking over, though, in 2 weeks during my vacation. I know you love him from KTLA. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet. Home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, augmented reality, anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. Outside that area, you can still call free, but you have to use Skype out. Some VoIP solution that'll call a phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Chat room is irc.twit.tv, and on we go with Wesley in Los Angeles. Hi, Wesley.
Hey, Leo. I'm on my last nerve. I have a question about Google, Gmail, and the whole whatever you want to call it. Recently, Gmail stopped coming on my desktop. They told me I'd been, you know, they couldn't be sure it was me, and they asked me some questions in order to recover my Gmail, which I've been using for the last 10 years, and I don't have another Gmail.
Did you forget your password, or you entered your password?
I forgot my password, and I always relied on the fact that if I forgot my password, they would simply send me to a site and ask me some questions, and then they would send me security number. I put it in, and they let me make a new password.
Right.
But they stopped that. They told me they couldn't do that because they weren't sure the website, I mean, the Gmail.
They don't want somebody hijacking your account. That's about as bad as it can get. You lose your Gmail account, especially if that's your primary email, because
right.
That means you lose everything else. If you then the bad guy goes to Twitter and says, "Well, I don't know, okay, we'll mail you a reset. I don't know. It goes to your bank. I don't know. Oh, we'll mail you a reset. And all of a sudden, the bad guy's got everything. So Google, there probably is no big company more careful about security than Google. They are really good. And for that reason, there have there you know, you talk about breaches all the time, but Google's never on that list of breaches. It's always very, very secure. They do have, of course, recovery options, but it's going to get more and more draconian because you have to really prove you're you and not some bad guy pretending to be you. So you can't.
And I've been to their recovery program like six times, and each time after about 3 days, I get a canned response that says, "We still can't tell whether it's you. Give us some more information." And by now, I've given them so much information that I don't think they have my waist size or anything like that, but they've got everything else.
And you're sure you're doing this with Google, right?
I'm sure I'm doing it with Google, but here's the kicker. On my cell phone, I can still get the old Gmail.
Yeah, you'll be able to for a little while, because what happens when you first, you'd probably notice this, as you log into Google, it sets a cookie that for at least 30 days will let you continue to log in. But after that, at some point, your phone's going to say, okay, you need to re-authenticate. Yeah, but generally, if you don't change devices, you're good. You know, you don't have to do the authentication again. So, but it may not last forever, and eventually you're going to have to get a new cell phone and all of that.
So my on the Gmail app on my cell phone still goes to my old Gmail account, but the Gmail old Gmail account on my desktop is blocked off.
Yeah, because your phone knows it's you, and Gmail accepts that because at one point you did authenticate with a phone, but you've forgotten your password, so you can't log in on the desktop anymore. Is that correct?
Right. And yeah. Is there a way that and you never get to a person on?
It's not Gmail's fault. You forgot your password.
Right.
You know, and they're trying to protect you because somebody else could say, I forgot Wesley's password. I'm Wesley. Yeah, I'm Wesley. Yeah. So they're going to make it hard on you. I'm not sure why the recovery hasn't worked yet. Maybe you're answering some of those questions wrong.
Well, they don't ask me any questions. They don't ask, like, the questions I first put in order to...
Well, they don't use security questions. That's a bad security...
security questions.
That's a right. Bad security practice. So this is where Google really does it right. Their security is very, very good. The questions they're asking you are questions that in theory only you would know the answer to. And I agree, they're difficult. If you've forgotten your password, and apparently it may be what's happened is you've done it enough that they're finally saying, okay, we can't, you know, we're going to really make sure this is him. But there are things like, when did you first create your Gmail account, you know, and what was the first email you sent? Things like that that are very, very difficult. Try recovering it from your phone, because the phone does know it's you. It might be easier to go through that process on the phone. If you go to support.google.com, they have a support note, 729-9973, on tips to account recovery. Read those and, you know, try to... The good news is, since you still have access to the account, you'll have things like your first email. You should say, if you haven't thrown it out, somewhere in that email pile, there'll be your first, you know, welcome to Gmail. So there'll be things that you can do. In general, if you're going to use Google, I wish, frankly, this is why your bank is not as secure as Google. This is why Facebook is not as secure as Google, because it's an inconvenience. There is a direct trade-off between security and convenience. The more secure it is, the more inconvenient it will be. And Google wants to be secure. They understand that they are protecting the crown jewels, your email address, and all the other things in your Google account. And this is, they're doing what's right. in order to, you know, be effective with Google, there's a few things you should do. And if you haven't done that, do this right now in your Google account. Attach a phone number to your Google account. Attach another non-Gmail email address to your Google account. Maybe if you have an address with your internet service provider, something you have access to, obviously. Use two-factor. And most importantly, create a good Google password that you then save. You don't want to be forgetting your password. A lot of times, people don't create good passwords. They do my daughter's birthday and my initials plus my phone number, something like that. That's secure. But the problem is then they forget it because they say, well, that's easy to remember. And they forget it. My mom does this all the time. I set my mom up with a password manager. Almost everybody has too many passwords to remember. If you're not using a password manager, you're undoubtedly doing something insecure like reusing passwords or making up passwords with birth dates and initials that aren't good passwords. Get a password manager. Let it generate the passwords. And you store those passwords in there. Don't forget them. Google's doing everything it can to protect you. Unfortunately, if you forget your password, that may be so much that it keeps you out of your email. So this is a time to set up a recovery phone number, a recovery email address. Use two-factor because that makes it even better. Two-factor and Google explains all of this, how to use it. And then really don't lose your password. Because if you do, you might just have to set up a new Google account. Just keep doing the recovery. Hope it works eventually. Nothing I can do to help you. There is no one at Google to help you either. It's a free service. They're doing the right thing is all I can say. The burden is on you. To follow good security practices. The reason your bank doesn't do this, the reason Facebook doesn't, so many sites don't do this, is because it's a pain in the butt. The bank uses security questions, terrible security practice, security questions. The bank text messages you if you forget your password, terrible security practices. But they do it because then you won't be in chip's shoes saying, oh, I can't get in. But it makes it a very much more vulnerable to bad guys. And so Google's decided not to do that. And all I can say is that's the way to do it. That's the right thing to do. And I don't blame you, Chip. As our chat room is pointing out, I have a Bitcoin wallet with a passphrase I can't remember. And quite a bit of Bitcoin in there. So it happens to the best of us. But that's the price. You know what? That's the price I pay for security. I blew it. I didn't put it in my password manager. I don't know why, but I didn't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We come back with more of your calls in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888
Ask Leo.
Line three is Priya in San Diego. Hi, Priya.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, a little cold, but not bad.
Cold? Wait a minute.
You know what?
Oh, you have a cold. It's not cold in San Diego. It's beautiful in San Diego.
I hate the most when electronic stuff is not working.
Oh, I do too. Isn't that awful? And you know what? If you have electronic stuff, there will come a time, no matter what, when it'll break.
But I have question for you, maybe more than one question.
I'm here for you.
Right now, my iPhone at home, well, I use iPhone right now. When I go home, I could not use Wi-Fi at home at all. And the place I live, the owner have AT&T and I have my service Verizon. I don't know, I have anything to do with it. So I told the owner that, you know, unhook and whatever I can. Just, he did everything. So do I shut my iPhone down and reboot it back. Nothing works.
So he has set up a Wi-Fi system in your place.
Yeah, his modem had Wi-Fi.
Okay, and he gave you the name and the login, right? You need a password for it too, and he gave you that, right?
Yes.
And when you put that on your phone and tried to join it, what happened?
Popping up said I connect to Wi-Fi, and then I cannot use it at all. It's buffing and buffing and buffing. It's just like driving me nuts.
Can you use? Is it slow or can you use it at all?
No.
No, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, but it still shows the Wi-Fi. It shows the name, show everything.
Yeah, because it would have given you a password error if it couldn't get on. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that his internet comes from AT&T. That's not it. It may be that you're too far away from the base station. No?
No, actually, the modem right behind my bedroom.
Oh, okay. And you see the little Wi-Fi volcano. You see all three bars on it.
Yeah, everything on. The lights went on, blinking away.
Okay. So, what you need to do, this is a little tricky, but in settings, go on the iPhone in settings, and you'll see when you go into settings on the iPhone, you'll see right at the top there, Wi-Fi, okay?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And you're going to tap that. It should say that Wi-Fi should be the name that your landlord gave you.
Right.
And you're going to tap that, and then you'll see all the other networks, but you'll see you're on that. Then there's a little I that stands for info. On the right of that. And if you tap it, it'll tell you about the network. And what you most importantly want to see is that you have an IP address. And it should begin with either 192 dot or 10 dot.
Okay.
If it has anything else like 164, you're not getting internet connection.
Okay.
So that's the first thing to do is make sure that you're actually getting on his router and that it's giving you what we call an internet protocol address or IP address. And that IP address will either begin with a 192 or a 10.
Okay.
Anything else, it's not letting you on. Okay.
Okay.
Now, if that's working and you have a good strong signal, that little volcano has all three bars on it. Then probably what he would probably want to do is, if you can get him to, and it sounds like he's being very helpful, is unplug his router and plug it back in again.
Right.
Okay. That's rebooting his router. That will help. And then you can also, and I wouldn't not do this, is right at the top of where I'm telling you to go, it says forget this network, right above the 192. It says forget this network, and that will ask you to re-enter the password and everything.
Right.
But make sure, if you see under the IPv4 addresses, a 192 is the IP address or a 10 is the IP address followed by other numbers, then you're getting on his system. The other thing may be his DNS isn't working. There may be other things going on. He may have set up some security. Does he say he has security on his router besides a password?
Well, I don't know, but when I did went to information and I saw the two address going in there, I'm not sure what it was. The address is like two different address.
Okay. Under the IPv4. So you're looking at it right now?
No.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. It'll give you an IP address that is a local address, not an internet address. And if you see that, anything but 192 or 10, if you see anything but those two, then usually that means you're not getting internet connectivity, that something on his system is misconfigured.
I see.
So that's why I'm asking. I mean, this is crazy complicated, and I shouldn't even.
I know.
You shouldn't even have to do this. Normally, it works pretty well. And you have just the iPhone, or are there other devices too?
Well, I do have iPhone. I have my PC. I have my iPad.
Does anything else work?
My iPad not working. My PC work now.
The PC is working, but not your iOS devices.
Nope.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep.
So the PC works fine. So you know that you've got the right password and you've got the right SSID.
I get the right password at the beginning already.
Yeah.
Storm coming.
Yeah, no. And it's working on your PC. What? I don't know that there are some things, maybe there's some routers that don't work with iOS but would work with Windows? That doesn't make a lot of sense because Wi-Fi is pretty standard. It doesn't.
Well, what happened was it wasn't working well with my PC for quite some time.
Oh.
Now, when he booted up and he add more...
Hold on a second. I have to take a break. I think I have an idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So it didn't work at first, and then he did something to the router?
Well, he called AT&T. I told him, my phone doesn't do good with Wi-Fi. Somehow it's not working at all. It used to work, and now it's like not working. It's like dead. And then it showed the Wi-Fi going to my phone, going to my iPad, but somehow it will not work. And I did whatever I have to do.
What did he do? He just called AT&T?
He called AT&T.
And then your PC started working?
Yeah, and he upgraded higher.
So maybe the issue is, and I don't know what he's got at his end, there may be a limited number of devices that you can put on that.
Uh-huh.
And so one way to test that would be to turn your PC off, turn your iPhone or your iPad off, just have one device and see if it can get on. It might be that you can only use one device at a time.
Oh, okay.
And so he called AT&T. They said, all right, we'll let you use five devices, and that's the PC. But now you really want three more devices on there, don't you?
Is that anything to do with... Didn't my iPhone have security settings?
No. Wi-Fi should just work. No. Wi-Fi should just work out of the box. Okay. It's nothing with your iPhone or your iPad. It's with his router. As long as you're doing the password correctly and the iPhone's joining it correctly, it's with his router. And it sounds like this call he made to AT&T saying, I need to be on more stuff. It sounds like, and I don't know what AT&T has set up for him.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I don't either. But it sounds like it might, and this is possible, he's maybe using something called a MiFi, which is a device that gets its internet from, not from a normal internet connection, but from the cell data. And those typically are limited to five total devices. That's very common.
I see. Well,
so he may be using that as a Wi-Fi access point. He's got four things on it. You've got one thing on it. There's no room for anything else. So that's my guess. I don't know. It depends what he's doing. If he has the normal AT&T internet coming through the wall, typically a router like that will be able to handle many, many devices. My router has 40 or 50 devices on it. That's not a problem.
Oh, yeah. I check and he should. I should be able to get in no problem. Like, I lived there for 3 years. It's only this past month I cannot get any Wi-Fi connection, period. It's show Wi-Fi there, but I cannot get the connection.
Yeah, it's something at his units. I think and you should ask him, is there a limit on the number of connections that can be attached to your AT&T internet at once? And he has to, it sounds like he expanded it once by one. That made your PC work.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to expand it by two more.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It sounds like what happened. I mean, I'm just guessing, but he did something and then your PC started working, right?
Right.
Yeah. He needs to do that thing again twice more.
He said his T-Mobile, his cell phone T-Mobile, is working.
Well, I don't know what that means. What I'm saying is I don't know what kind of internet connection he has. If he has a device,
I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't. And if it's there are devices that have limited number of connections. Like I can only have five devices connected at once. If that's what he's got, that's the problem.
Okay, now...
I got to run. I'm sorry, Priya.
Okay.
I'm sorry. All right. Just talk to him and see what he's got going there. It sounds like it's really, it's up to him. It's not you. Don't let him blame you. It's not your iPad or your iPhone. It's something going on with the way his internet is set up. One way to try this would be to turn off your PC and see if you can connect with something else. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hit me. No, don't hit me. Fire away. 8888. Ask Leo. Line 4, John, South Bend, Indiana. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing there, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, man, things are going great, man.
Good.
Going great.
Good.
All right. So, I bought a used MacBook Pro mid-2012, 15-inch off of a guy, $280.
Good deal.
Yeah. So, it had a spinning drive in it, so I put an SSD in it. And when I did the internet recovery tool for OS X, it put it all the way back to Mountain Lion. Holy
yeah, God. It will. It'll put it back to what the original Mac OS was. But then you can do the upgrades. Now, at 2012, you may not be able to get it all the way up to Mojave, the current Mac OS.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it does.
That's how network recovery works. It reinstalls what the MacBook came with.
Okay. All right, so I got it back up to Mojave. I actually did the update all the way to...
This is actually good because whenever you buy a used computer, I love this idea. Get rid of the old drive and start with a new one. You don't know what's on that.
That's exactly why I did that.
Very smart.
Just pulled it and did it, and it actually upgraded the RAM while I was inside the computer anyway.
And honestly, that makes it a pretty usable MacBook. And I will use my 2015 MacBook for the longest time because I didn't like those new keyboards. There's no reason not to.
I like this 2015.
Yeah, it's a good. They're beautiful. And by putting in more RAM and a bigger and better hard drive, you've probably brought it right up to the 21st century.
Yeah, I got it because I'm starting a podcast there, and I'm doing it over Skype and stuff.
Congratulations.
It's about trucking, so it'll be interesting.
Oh, that'll be great. Man, that's a natural, because truckers, I mean, you got a lot of time on the road. What better thing to do than listen to a podcast about trucking?
Yeah. Actually, I got a good thing going on here. I got a DOT officer that's going to be on.
Oh, perfect.
Talk about DOT regulations.
I'm going to give you for free. I'm going to give you a name.
What's that?
The late night, nonstop, all night trucking show.
Hey, that's great there because I'm a nighttime driver.
The late night, nonstop truck driving show. How about that?
You got it. You
late
got it.
Night,
hey, that's
nonstop news, truck driving show. That's LNNSTDS.
There we go.
Well, that's not going to say anything. But anyway,
anyway,
I'll give that to you for free, which is about what it's worth.
Yeah. Anyway, when I got it back up to Mojave, and I want if it ever crashed again, by hopefully never, but can I download a second copy of Mojave
and
make a bootable USB drive?
Yeah. So ever since Apple started putting the system updates in the App Store, There's been a process involved. So what you do, in fact, you can go in the App Store, you can find Mojave, but you can even go back and find Mountain Lion, find a lot of different versions. You download the installer. Now, what happens when you run the installer, after the install, it deletes the file you downloaded. So you need to do this before you use it, or now that you've already installed it, download Mojave again, and then you're going to look inside the package, and there's stuff you're going to save, but It's a little complicated, so I'm going to refer you to an article. We'll put this in the show notes on making a bootable USB key for Mac OS. And it's a great thing to do. Everybody who has a computer should have a bootable USB key with their operating system on it, because that's the best way to get out of trouble, right?
Yeah, exactly. Especially, I don't want to do all the updates again from Mountain Lion. That took a while.
Yeah. So Apple, and I'll even tell you, I'll put it in the show notes, but Apple has a tech note on how to do this. You can do it with the command line, but you can also do it with an app. But the tech note is at support.apple.com. It's HT201372. But we'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, I'll... One size memory card or memory USB thumb drive should I get? About 32 gig?
Let me see what Apple says. Yeah, 32 would be more than enough. Probably 16 is plenty. I know with Windows 8's enough. So the good news is these are cheap and they're lying all over the place.
I was going to say I can get a 16 gig.
Mojave needs 16. Look, I have one right here. Mojave needs 16, so get a 16.
All right, well, I can go to the dollar store and get one.
Exactly. Look in, you probably have some Cap'n Crunch in the cupboard. Look and see if they put it in there. There's.
They might have.
Yeah. Look, now comes. I am amazed that no cereal has yet put free USB keys in the cereal. It just seems like a natural.
Well, it should be. They're as cheap as they are.
Be careful.
Hey, I got my half a terabyte SanDisk drive for that Mac for $49.99.
Nice. Isn't it amazing? These SSDs have gotten so inexpensive. And honestly, especially in a laptop, when I buy a new computer, I buy SSDs. I do not buy spinning drives. There was some concern early on that these solid state drives wouldn't last as long. They last as long. They even last longer. They're certainly much, much faster. The only negative is their price per gigabyte's higher, but those prices are coming down, and that makes them much more desirable. So they're telling me in the chat room, once you've installed Mojave, of course, the network installer, Shift Option Command R, will work on that and won't give you the old version. Once you've installed a new version, I guess it makes a note of that and it'll give you Mojave. That's not always my experience, especially if you're putting in a new drive. So I think it's a good idea to have that key lying around.
Okay, yeah. When I tried to figure out how to get Mojave to download in the Mac App Store when it was stuck on Mountain Lion, it said that I needed to put in payment information or update my payment information. I had to go to another Apple device, trigger an email saying that
charge for it, but unfortunately, the way the App Store is set up, just like the iOS App Store, they want you to have a payment card on file. And they, from time to time, will confirm it. Almost as much to confirm, literally, I'm installing a free iOS app, and it says, what's the CVV code for your credit card? Why do you need that? It's a free app. Or you just need it. But all right. So this is Apple. Welcome to the, this reminds me very much of our caller who had trouble with getting his Gmail back. Companies are doing the right thing with security. This is a security thing. We're making sure you own this. And then we do it at a kind of random times, apparently. It's not obvious when they're going to do it. It's inconvenient. And that's the trade-off. And honestly, I guess as users, I should probably stop complaining because they're doing the right thing. Yeah, it's inconvenient. And the real problem is companies that don't want users to complain doing the wrong thing, not secure enough, like my bank, which continues to send me text messages to log into my account, even though we know that is a very insecure way of authenticating. Text messages are easily spoofed and stolen and hijacked. So the bank knows that's insecure. Their CISO, their chief information security officer, is telling the CEO that every day. You can't use text messages. And the CEO saying, we have to use text messages. We don't want calls from all of our customers complaining they can't get their money. But it's not secure. I don't care. It's convenient. And that's the battle in a nutshell. And so I will not complain about Apple, even though they constantly bug me about passwords and credit card numbers. Because honestly, they're doing the right thing in security. And so does Google. And and that's really what we want them to do. 8888, ask Leo. I have a vivid imagination, a rich fantasy life. We can't do it. You've got to do it. We can't do it. TechGuyLabs.com, that's the website. The GizWiz coming up. Oh, those aren't cuts. That's ink. I'm a fountain pen user. And the fountain pen I really like has this ink called Diamine Oxblood. My hands are not cut up. But if they look cut up, it's I'm certainly ink. Duo is good, MD. That's any dongle is a good security system. Hey, you know what else is a good security system? Let's talk about it. This would be a good time to mention LastPass. I love having LastPass as a sponsor. I feel like this is a public service announcement. If you have passwords, and you do, you need a password vault. You need the best password vault, the number one password vault, LastPass. They do it all right. And don't just take my word for it. Steve Gibson talked to the founder, looked at the code. He uses LastPass. That should tell you everything. And if you're not using LastPass in business, you're nuts. We know that employees, more than half of all employees, share passwords, not only with each other, but with people outside the business. Protect yourself and your business with LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager in business as well as with individuals. 43,000 businesses use LastPass. 13.5 million people use LastPass. I use LastPass. Steve Gibson uses LastPass. It makes it easy and convenient to share passwords, but you don't have to give your employees the password. Our bookkeeper doesn't have the password for our QuickBooks. She clicks the link in LastPass. It logs her in. We change the password. It's changed automatically. She never even sees it. That's the way you want it. We have folders for shared departments. So the accounting department has a folder. The ops department has a folder. LastPass is built on what we call a zero-knowledge security model. The data is encrypted and decrypted on the device. LastPass never gets to see it. No, of course, the bad guys don't either, only you. And when I say device, that's the other reason I love LastPass. It works everywhere. Mac, Windows, every browser, Chrome, Firefox. It works on Linux. It works on iOS. It works on Android. It works everywhere. That means one password vault that's automatically everywhere you want it to be. Auto-fill-in on iOS and Android makes it so easy. Oh, I love that feature. In fact, LastPass is the first app I install ever on any device because it's the app that lets me then log into all the other apps. And for businesses, man, you can have policies, over 100 policies, 150, I think, last count, that will let you at your business say, for instance, as we do to our employees because we use it at Twit, you have to have two-factor. Sorry. See, we can enforce good, strong security. We even can say what the minimum requirements are for their password. And we, of course, can deactivate accounts anytime. That's important, too, because people come and go, right? LastPass's password generator creates long, strong, perfect passwords. You'll never remember them. You don't have to. LastPass remembers it. There's LastPass for families. That's what we use at home. LastPass Premium for personal use. I use that for more than a decade. LastPass Enterprise is what we use at work. That's the big boy. And for smaller teams, teams of 50 or fewer, LastPass Teams. It is the best password solution for your business, for you. And if you're not using it, just go lastpass.com/twit. Save yourself years of trouble. By the way, do the security audit. First thing, it'll tell you all the places you've reused passwords. You can fix all that. They help you automate through it. It's fantastic. And I use LastPass with a YubiKey, so don't try to get into my LastPass because you can't. LastPass.com/twit. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcasts. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. He is the Giz Whiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gizmo wizard, Dick DiBartolo. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you, pal?
I am great. You know, going to Hawaii in a couple of weeks.
Going Hawaii. Look, I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt.
I know.
I am carrying a Hawaiian pineapple.
Oh, well, a can there.
Well, it came in a can. Yeah.
You live in New York. You can't get the, yeah. All right, I understand.
It's the Philippines part of Hawaii. I'm looking on the can. Yeah.
I bring my Hawaiian shirts to Hawaii, or was that just too touristy?
I think that's too touristy.
I should wear a suit.
No, there you go. Dickie, bring one. And see what everybody's wearing.
See what they're wearing. Yeah, you got to fit in. I have so many Hawaiian shirts, as you know.
I know you do. On account of you, I do too.
Yeah, I love that look. Yours looks really good. That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
So Dick joins us not to talk about Hawaii every week, but in fact to talk about gizmos and gadgets because he's the Giz Whiz. And you've had some great ones lately. What's first this week?
Well, you know what, Leo? This is kind of in your honor, maybe not – for your current trip because you'd have to get it. It's new from Bracketron. Do you know that company?
Oh, it Bracketron, sounds like one of those Mad Magazine made-up companies.
It almost does. It almost does. So Bracketron makes every kind of bracket to hold all your gadgets.
At least the name matches the business. That's good.
Yes, exactly. And so one of the latest is the thing called Road Trip a Travel Mount.
Uh-oh, I want this. And,
I know. So this has a little wire at the top that comes out when you're on an airplane.
Oh.
It hangs on the seat that locks the tray table.
Oh, look at that.
And then it has a really strong magnet that goes on your phone. Now, I didn't want to put it on my phone. And then I thought, wait a minute. This magnet is so strong, I'm going to insert it between my case and my phone. And it works perfectly. So this way, you know, at the back of my phones, all my phones have a clapboard on the back. So when I shoot videos, it shows.
You're kidding me.
People say, wait a minute.
Oh, look at that.
Is that a clapboard on your phone?
So clever. I never even heard of that.
Yeah. I found a company that made it, and I bought one. And
it's
then
very
as I changed
Hollywood.
Phones, it's very Hollywood. All right. So then when you... if you want to use it just on your tray table, it bends many different ways.
Yeah.
So you can use it on a tray table. When you rent the car, the back, in the back of the Road Tripper, there are two prongs that they say fit almost every car vent system.
Oh my God!
So you can use it there.
Oh,
and
my
also,
God.
When,
this is
when you use it on the snack tray, there's a place behind it to drop your headphones, especially if you're wearing like noise reduction Bose headsets or something. They can hang there. And then at the hotel, you put it back into the regular mode that you would
can
use
you
on the
this
snack
for a
tray.
Tablet as well as a phone.
Yes, up to 10.1 inches.
Oh, I have a 12.9 inch.
Oh, you have the big guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it comes in a nice travel case where there's room for the Road Tripper and any charging cables you have. It's just out. It's $49.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's really nicely made, and I think the kid is very clever. It's a Bracketron Road Tripper Travel.
I'm going to order it. It might be able. It's on Amazon, right? I might be able to get it.
It is
time,
on Amazon,
right? I think if it comes before Friday.
When are you going?
Well, I'm leaving Friday. We have a new show this Friday, but we recorded ahead for the.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it'll probably come in time.
And then of course Rich DeMuro will be filling in. You'll be back next week, and then with Rich DeMuro the week after.
Oh, right. Rich, he's my favorite. Rich. Oh,
don't be too. Come on now. You know I'm sensitive.
I know you
don't like him too much.
No, don't worry.
You can like him a little.
He's okay.
Really good looking. He's super smart. He's the author of 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. He's on television.
Well,
I know 1 week I'm going to come back and I'm going to knock on the door and they're going to have changed the lock.
No.
And they're going to say, oh, we don't need you anymore. Let me just slide the check under the door. Goodbye, Leo.
No, that's not going to happen. Henry might do that, but not Rich.
Yeah, my son might do it to me. Thank you, Dickie D. You'll find his stuff, including this, at gizwiz.biz. When you're there, the website, gizwiz.biz, you'll also find the fabulous What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine from this guy in the Hawaiian shirt. All you have to do is identify a close-up picture of a gadget or a gizmo. It's tough. It's not easy. That's why it's a contest. He also has a fabulous weekly podcast he does with Chad Johnson. You'll find that at gizwiz.tv. And we'll see you next week.
Very good.
Thank you,
Dickie. I'll be here.
All right.
Take care, buddy.
Let me say hello to Storm in Goldthwaite, Texas. Hello, Storm.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, not doing too bad. I've got a CPU question for you.
All right.
I bought a brand new computer in 2007, and it came with Windows XP on it, and it was a 32-bit operating system.
Yes.
When it came time, I updated it to 7, which was 32-bit also.
Yes.
And I wanted to go to 10, but it said that little Microsoft helper that came out said that my GPU couldn't support 10.
Oh,
that's all right. You know, it's went on and on. And then in this December, my GPU died. Oh. So I put in a new graphics card. Oh. I thought, well, I'm going to try.
This it should work. Yeah,
it did. It worked perfectly.
Good.
And now I have Windows 10 in there, 32 bits.
Woohoo!
But, you know, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, right?
Oh, yeah.
While I was poking around putting in Windows 10, I found out that I have an Intel Core 2 Duo CPU.
Okay.
And reading the specs on that, it says it's a 32-bit operating system, but it has comma x64-based processor.
X64 is the generic term for all modern processors from Intel or AMD. Basically, all modern desktop processors. And you twigged onto a key feature, 64. Yeah, that's a 64-bit architecture. You don't have to run Windows 32.
I could actually put a 64-bit
Windows
on there.
Yeah.
How big of a hassle would that be?
I wouldn't do it unless. The only reason that you should go to Windows 64 is because it can address more memory.
That was my problem. I was thinking with the graphics cards. If I put more memory in there, it would run.
No, that wasn't it.
On 32.
No, it was just it didn't have a driver for that graphics card. The memory on your graphics card does not count. It's the memory on your motherboard, your RAM, that counts. Okay. How much RAM do you have?
Limit on there, when you have 32 operating system, it limits you at 4.
That's right.
Gigabytes.
That's right.
And I thought if I went to 64, then you know you have free range.
If you ever want to put more than 4 gigs in your machine, you should go to Windows 64. That's right.
Okay, but that wouldn't make a difference with my graphics card, huh?
Nope.
Okay.
It's addressing its memory completely separately from the operating system.
Okay.
I think the graphics card was simply that the manufacturer never offered a Windows 10 driver. It probably didn't make any difference anyway.
But, well, see, the driver I'm using on it now, I had to search all over the place to get Windows.
Yeah, exactly. Go to 64-bit. Everybody's doing it. All the kids are doing it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. What a great question. Thanks for calling. And thank you for joining me, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.